Good morning to you.
Good morning, Josh.
May it please the court, congratulations in a month-long federal trial in a workers' compensation case. That was one of the few times I've heard Mr. Chikababa's name pronounced correctly.
That was purely a guess, but thank you very much.
Mr. Chikababa started out as a revolutionary in Georgia before he became a Brooklyn resident in the state of New York. He sought asylum after him and his cohorts bid to get independence for the country of Georgia, resulted in that newly elected government being overthrown by Edward Shevardnadze. In the early 90s, my client had to seek political asylum and come to the United States. He went through the long, arduous process of becoming a United States citizen and became a truck driver over the road. He served in that capacity for many years and was very good at it, very experienced at it. On the day of the accident, prior to the accident, he was healthy, mobile, was active. He was living the American dream from a Georgian's perspective. And then the accident happened on August 9th, 2010, where this 350-pound man was thrown from the back of the semi to the front of the semi and sustained various injuries. After time in the hospital, a couple different hospital stays, and a bunch of diagnostic testing, he was determined to suffer from bilateral radiculopathy, which created problems in him walking, being able to ambulate, being mobile, doing many of the normal functions of daily living. He was determined to have been disabled by his physicians and by the Workers' Compensation Court from August of 2010 through December of 2010. And then he quit doing physical therapy and stayed home to convalesce, try to recuperate, try to get better as best he could, given that the physical therapy was not working for him. Later in 2014, as everything was coming to a head, he went back to his physician to find out his status, to determine if any further remedies or treatment would be beneficial to him or if he was at maximum medical improvement. The doctors found that he was, in fact, at maximum medical improvement. Interestingly enough, in this case, the doctor's deposition is important. There are things in the doctor's deposition, contrary to what the appellee has stated, that are very important to this case. And we're asking that the court determine that deposition should have been received into evidence.
What is in the doctor's deposition that pertains to treatment and or care from that December 10 time frame to the early 2014 time frame?
It's the criticism of the trial court was that Mr. Chikababa was not seeking new treatments, trying to get better. And specifically, I think, was with regard to the physical therapy, and that's, of course, what the defendant, the appellee, argued in this case. The thing that was revealing in Dr. Rafman's deposition was that he said, when asked, when defense counsel was being critical of Chikababa's not pursuing physical therapy, he said, you know, and all I assume I can talk about what's in the deposition, even though it hasn't been received into evidence. Dr. Rafman said, you know, it really is not realistic that this physical therapy would have been helpful to Mr. Chikababa. It wouldn't have been something he could do given his weight and given the requirements of physical therapy. And if that, in fact, is the case, and the court would have had the benefit of knowing that information, it seems that the court certainly could have made a different decision concerning Mr. Chikababa's course of action with not pursuing physical
therapy. So that's what is the best stuff in the doctor's deposition that would pertain to this gap?
Because
he was not a treating physician, right? There was no visit in that gap.
Not with this physician,
With this
no.
physician, right?
Not with this physician, no.
Right.
He's the neurologist, and so he doesn't do, the routine prescription of drugs, routine checkups and stuff like that. That's not generally what he does.
So am I hearing it? Did somebody fill in the gaps, the treating physician fill in the gaps that were left out because you were not able to get the deposition in?
Well, what happened was he was continuing to treat with his family physician, Yuri Sobel. And ironically, one of the things I learned in this case is if you have a difficult time getting records from a physician in New York, that you at least make that known in the record as far as what the difficulties are, but that's not in the record. And so we don't have the records of Dr. Sobel, but we do have the testimony of my client that he was regularly seeing Dr. Sobel, and the other physicians apparently were aware of this as well. He was taking his medications.
I guess what I'm asking is, how were you prejudiced?
Well, my client not having temporary disability benefits for a period of, I believe it was 3.5 years, is where the prejudice lies, because it's a lot of money to someone who's not able to work and doesn't have an income.
Would that have been improved by the admission of the doctor's deposition?
Well, I believe the trial court then would have had the evidence to say he was doing what he could that he was fulfilling the requirements of the case law, saying that he needed to be following doctor's treatment.
Well, let me turn it around. In the order, the trial judge says, essentially, is this correct? No TTD for this gap because there's no doctor reports.
Correct.
Is that a correct statement of the law?
That's an absolutely fair statement. I think that's where he got it wrong.
Is that a legal error?
I believe so, because the issue is not whether he was seeing a doctor. The issue is whether or not he was disabled. And that's where Frauendorf made the correct determination that we need to be careful what our focus is here. We're talking about temporary total disability. It's whether or not the plaintiff can work or not. Because if he can't, not able to earn a living, then he's temporarily disabled, should receive benefits.
And how is that proven under our cases? How is the degree of TTD established in the cases? Does it require doctor evidence, or can it be established through the testimony of the worker?
It doesn't have to be, that's going to be the judge's call, the trial judge's call. But this court does not have to have doctor's evidence. The case stands for the proposition that the plaintiff's testimony itself, third party's testimony itself, can establish the fact that he's not able to work.
But so, doesn't the employee have to be treating?
He was
doing
treating.
Something?
He was treating and doing, it's a difficult issue. And I thought to myself, well, what if he was paralyzed? And there's no hope he's going to get better. And he essentially was, the type of injury. And so, if he's paralyzed, he's never going to work again. Could he go to a physician and maybe make some improvement, maybe, gain some feeling or movement in an arm? Sure, perhaps he could, but that doesn't change the issue, the fact that he's not going to be able to work. And so, as a court, do we say, well, if you don't have that record that you were making some effort to try to move your arm, even though you're paralyzed, are we still not going to pay your benefits because you couldn't work? And that's where the issue becomes problematic, because based upon the appellee's argument, yeah.
After the accident, what type of benefits did your client receive from the insurance carrier of the employer?
Well, he didn't receive anything until this case was concluded. That's not true. I believe it was in the summer of 2014 there was a partial payment.
Okay. Before that, he didn't get anything?
No. Okay. I'll reserve my 2 minutes for rebuttal unless there are any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Regenberg, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Your Honor, please report. Pardon my voice. A frog got my throat last night and hasn't left. I'll try to be loud enough for everyone to hear. My name is Dennis Rickenberg. I appear today on behalf of the appellee, in this case, Albatross Express. This is an appeal from an award entered by Judge Frederick April 1st, 2015, in which the appellant was found to be entitled to a running award of temporary disability or permanent disability benefits from and after May 2nd, 2014. The two issues appear to be, or are, for that fact, at the court's denial of temporary disability benefits from December 9th, 2010 through May 1st, 2014, and the court's denial of future medical benefits. Both of those decisions, appellee submits, represent discretionary determinations by the trier of fact and are not clearly wrong in this instance and should be affirmed.
You're not contesting the award, then?
We are not contesting the award, running award from and after May 2nd, 2014. We are not. That's not on appeal. The only facts or the only issues are those two
period, that one period of benefit in the future medical expenses.
And is your argument that these are just failures of proof?
In essence, Your Honor, the trial court, Judge Frederick and his award, did a very careful analysis of the evidence that was before him and came to the conclusion that with respect to temporary disability benefits, there was no evidence establishing the four elements of temporary disability: suffering from a compensable injury, convalescing from a compensable injury, seeking treatment for that compensable injury, and an inability to work because of that compensable injury.
Doesn't that kind of defy logic?
Not in this case, Your Honor, because of the absence of any medical opinion expressing a belief that Mr. Chikababa, the appellant in this case, was incapable of working during that time frame. There was testimony about this family physician, treating physician, primary care provider, that no records were offered.
So the judge in the order says there's no evidence by way of medical records. This is on, transcript page 15.
Yes.
There's no evidence by way of medical records to prove plaintiff was seeking medical treatment for his low back injury that was aiding to his recovery during the calendar years 11, 12, 13, or 14. Is that the basis on which there was the denial of TTD during that gap? In other words, does it appear to be an understanding by the trial judge that in the absence of medical records for that period results in a denial?
In interpreting the award, I would say it's the absence of medical evidence, not necessarily the absence of medical records.
Would the deposition have provided that?
In all due respect, absolutely not. The deposition, once Exhibit 20, the deposition of Dr. Rafman, is reviewed, you see that Dr. Rafman essentially regurgitated the contents of his reports or office notes, which are in Exhibits 8 and 9 in the record. And in addition to that, Dr. Rafman discussed the findings of other physicians, none of whom examined appellant between December 8, 2010 and April 30, 2014, the next time that Dr. Rafman saw appellant. So there still is that gap not resolved by the deposition, because there simply is no evidence of care during that time frame other than appellant's testimony. And when you review appellant's testimony, you will see that appellant also complained of a host of other symptoms, including dizziness, an abdominal hernia. The petition sought recovery for cardiac conditions, traumatic brain injury, cervical conditions. There's nothing in the record that establishes that the care appellant was receiving during this gap was associated with compensable injuries as opposed to these other hosts of conditions from which he complained and testified.
Well, at the point that the court determined that the employee had permanent total disability, what was the change in his condition from the time of the accident?
There's no evidence to show that there was or was not a change, and that's the appellant's burden here.
I mean, you think that we can presume that he got worse over that period?
Over a passage of 3 years, I think it's safe to assume that, and Cole got described him as a 350-pound gentleman. I think the award finds him to have been a 400-pound gentleman who got up to 450 pounds during that intervening period. The degenerative process, if the court receives Dr. Rafman's deposition, there is a discussion of the degenerative process in there as a worsening condition. It's conceivable that, yes, very easily could have worsened from 2010 to 2014.
When did he reach maximum medical improvement?
The court found he reached maximum medical improvement May 2nd, 2014, which was the commencement of the running award to the present time.
Does the trial court give an explanation as to why it did or did not believe workers' testimony? In terms of credibility?
That was not discussed in the award, to my recollection, and I'm sure it was not. The award, as you have accurately noted, page 15 of the transcript, page 9 of the award itself, discussed the absence of any compelling or probative medical evidence support a claim for temporary disability.
So it says, while plaintiff testified, he saw his family doctor, Dr. Sobel. The court does not have one record from that doctor's office to document what treatment plaintiff was receiving, the nature and extent of plaintiff's pain or injuries for which he was treating, or to document the success or the failure of the treatment.
That gets back to the point of, now we're in the realm of speculation and conjecture. Why was the appellant seeking that treatment if he in fact did receive that treatment? Even appellant didn't make it clear as to why he was seeking and receiving that treatment. So the burden is on the appellant, the injured worker in these cases, for a reason, and that simply was not met in this case. For that period from December 9, 2010 to May 1st.
Did the trial judge get it right when he kept the deposition out?
Yes.
Why?
Ticking off. Appellant relies on Rule 10 as a basis for receiving the deposition. Rule 10 reads that it's in the discretion of the trial court.
Doesn't Rule 10 read a sworn statement or deposition transcribed by a person authorized to take depositions is a signed written report for purposes of this rule?
Yes, but you move to the top, and anything under Rule 10 is admissible at the discretion of the trial court. Page 78 of the bulletin says.
Can the trial court abuse its discretion?
Yeah, but when you review the reasoning of Judge Frederick at page 78 of the Bill of Exceptions, he discusses his rationale, which is that even under Rule 10, in his discretion and his belief, there needs to be a sense of fairness.
Couldn't you have accomplished that sense of fairness by taking a deposition yourself to fill in whatever gaps you thought existed based on the deposition?
I could have.
Don't the rules permit that?
The rules permit that. And the rules also, in this case, with that in the absence of a pretrial process other than preparation of a pretrial statement 1 week prior to trial, at which point this deposition was disclosed as a trial exhibit, I had not received notice of the deposition taken October 14, 2014. I had not received notification of its use as an exhibit prior to pretrial.
So but your client had received notice of it in the federal case.
My client, as a party aligned with plaintiff, had received notice in the federal case. Yeah.
Right. So yes, Albatross had received notice of the deposition in the federal case, correct?
Yes. Exhibit 30 is the notice.
Right. And the Associated Grocers, or whatever it's called, right, would have been contrary to the worker in the federal case.
Correct.
So in this case, so to speak, you are contrary to the worker. And in the federal case, a party contrary to the worker would have appeared.
But I'm not sure that.
In other words, they would have had, grocers would have had a motive to cross-examine worker in the federal case. Is that correct?
Correct. Whether the motive was the same as mine might have been with respect to, I'm facing a lifetime award of disability benefits.
But generally speaking, wishing as a commercial entity not to pay money.
If that is the motivation that you're looking for similar, then yes, they would have been.
So there was a party arguably present in the federal case with a motive to cross-examine the doctor and do what they could do.
Arguably.
Okay. Is your position, though, assuming it was error, it wasn't prejudicial?
Which brings you back to that point, Your Honor, which is nothing in the deposition discusses and addresses the two issues that form the crux of this appeal, which are the denial of temporary disability and the denial of future medical. You can read that deposition over and over again, and nothing in there changes that outcome. All of the records are before the court. Judge Frederick got it right, and happily, respectfully request you affirm the decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? A minute and 54 seconds. Mr. Bocott.
Thank you. I'm glad the issue of the motive of the deposing party was brought up, because when I first looked at this case and read the brief of the appellee, I thought I had a problem in that, you know, they get to shift kind of what the truth is, depending on if they're in subrogation seat or if they're in the defendant's seat in the workers' compensation case, and I think that's problematic. You know, as a law practitioner, but from a practical matter, it benefits them. But Every case that they cite, when I went back and read them, on page 8 of the appellee's brief, it cites the Hub case and then cites several cases within the Hub case. And all of those cases support the appellant's position in this case, which is if you have a opposing party with a similar motive, then that's enough. They let those depositions in, and they put a lot of depositions in the federal court if that's the case. They don't even have to have been a party to the case or have notice. So I think that's important, and that really, I think, is fatal to their argument that they have to have the ability to go in and cross-examine. You know, in a workers' compensation case or a negligence case, the only difference we have is whether or not there's a fault. But then we go to causation, and we go to the nature extent of the injuries, and that's what Dr. Raithman in his deposition testified to, was the causation of the nature and extent of the injury. I disagree. I want that the testimony to be part of the record so that it can be considered, and I believe that this court, even the trial court, would have made a different decision had it been able to consider and rely upon the evidence in Dr. Raithman's deposition.
That goes to the prejudice. Would you explain why you think the content of that deposition would have led to a different result?
You know, when you look at a medical record, if I may, it's very nondescript as far as the nature and extent of an injury. And with Dr. Raithman's deposition, he used diagrams, color diagrams, to show the type of injury that this gentleman had. And he said, you know, from December, and this is important, from December of 2010 all the way through the date of his deposition, Mr. Chikababa's condition didn't change. This is what was going on in his back. This was the cervical radiculopathy that he had. This is why he couldn't move. This is why being a real heavy man with this injury is really bad. And he goes through and he explains it all. And you don't get that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is Reinitz versus Reinitz.